Everybody, and welcome to the PC Gamer Show. My name is Tom Marks, assistant editor here at PC Gamer, with James Davenport, our associate editor. How you doing, James?
I'm doing pretty fine.
And Tim Clark, global editor-in-chief. How are you, Tim?
We'll see that. Rare guest appearance for me.
Yes, indeed. And we are back in the office. That is right. We are finally in the new office. We're in a studio space. We're together at last after month of Skype.
It's been nice.
Yeah, it is.
It's been nice.
And it's a nice little setup here. We're cozier.
Our thighs are touching, almost.
Yeah, it's an intimate setup, if you will. Yeah. But we're glad to be here. We're glad to be back. We got a great show for you today. We're going to be talking about episodic games and specifically what happens when an episodic game gets canceled. We'll be talking about a little about Hearthstone because, Tim, we have you on the show, so we can't not talk about Hearthstone. A little about Black Friday, which, for those of you who don't know, is the looming retail day that comes after America's Thanksgiving. And we'll also be discussing kind of how this has been the year of the open world game to an extreme degree. Plus, we'll be taking your questions from Twitch chat. We do not have a Cat Fantastic again this week, but I'm hoping to get that in for next week's show. We will have the triumphant return of Cat Fantastic. But yeah, let's jump right into the show and let's ask, what have we been playing? James, what have you been playing lately? You still on that Fallout kick?
I was going to ask if you could guess, but I'm done with Fallout. Well,
it's done. It's done with you.
Yeah. I'm done for now. Meaning I just – maybe we can talk more about this during the open world discussion. But when it comes to open world, sprawling open world RPGs like Fallout, they're so consuming to me that it becomes less about fun and more about an obligation to the game.
What was the thing you felt like you had to get done for you to be free from it?
I don't know. That's the thing. It's like life. I'm just living my life in this RPG, looking for some kind of meaning.
You didn't have anything you wanted to kind of tick off?
I mean, not really. I didn't care about crafting. The story was like, I finished the story, and the story was good for a Bethesda game, which means it was shit. But
ouch, man.
It wasn't absolutely horrible, but it does the thing where everything comes to a point, a climax, and then it's just over and you're back in the world and nothing has really changed.
It's not really about that in their games. I remember like Andy Kelly and I, when we were both playing Skyrim back in the day, we became fixated on like how powerful a single weapon you could make using by exploiting the crafting and enchanting systems. And I spent probably like the best part of an entire month, I think as did he, like making daggers, collecting leather straps, then making daggers, then trying to like goose up all my enchanting stats so that you had to keep repeating it to kind of get incrementally stronger. And eventually I made this Daedric War Axe that was like 996 damage. I'm not quite sure why I couldn't get 999, something like that. And maybe I even got over 1,000 actually. And I'd been consumed by the desire of making this axe. And then as soon as I had it, and it would one-shot every dragon in the game, literally one-shot, I went through the portal, because I'd left like the slither of the story left.
Right.
The final kind of denouement. Mm-hmm. Went through the portal, did the final mission, killed the staff, and then literally never played the game ever again. But I felt like that time was well spent.
And I think that's why I say I'm not done with Fallout 4. I know I'll return to the crafting, and I know I'll like want to get my dagger.
No, you're
you know,
saying that, so you sound like you haven't rejected it.
I love Fallout 4. I've had a really good time with it. I spent like 60 hours playing the game. I think I'm just like kind of on. I'm feeling a bit soured after beating the main story because I mean it's still not super. It does some cool stuff with factions that hasn't been done in one of their open world games yet, I think, to this extent. And there's some cool, like, huge battles. It feels like the scale of the battles in the game are big. Like, you have four different factions just warring it out. And there's one time around this certain this monument in the game where there was probably like – it felt like 50 to 100 NPCs on screen at once just like duking it out. And there's like, you know, copters in the air and it was like, cool. I was just like running through it and just
– What would have happened if you hadn't have engaged with it? Would they have like – would one side have whittled the other side down? That's always the thing with those like showpiece scripted battles is you feel like no one's actually damaging anyone else and they're just kind of like an animated backcloth.
Oh, it's certain – there was like the mission was interesting because you go in – I don't know like how you approach it like from different parts of the narrative, but you go in like on a certain faction side and it's your job to tip the scales of this giant battle. So everyone's going at it and I don't know if like you can fail by not killing enough dudes or if it's just like they beep beep at each other until like you do all the work. But it felt like I was influencing one of those giant like YouTube battles where they just console command a bunch of dudes in. And that was, I think, probably the best part of the game. And it had nothing to do with like the narrative necessarily. It was just like, oh, the systems are at play. And I feel like I'm having an influence on this world and this battle I kind of came across. So that was really neat. But yeah, Fallout 4, I think I'm going to put it down for now. And again, I had a really great time with it. But I'm just going to wait till there are a bunch of mods out and, maybe some of the DLC that inevitably is going to happen and hop back in then, which hopefully isn't too soon because I'm enjoying this, like, free time I have now. It's great, so.
Yeah, we've kind of gotten through the worst of the end-of-the-year release craze, haven't we? It's starting to die down.
What else is coming out, really?
Well, Just Cause today.
I never feel that way about it, by the way. Like, because I don't really. Because I don't have to write the reviews, so I don't care. Like, more is good news for me.
Right, Rainbow Six is coming out. I'll be reviewing that December 1st.
Well, Tim, what have you been playing lately?
I want you to see if you can guess, Tom.
Hearthstone.
I've been playing. Yeah, I haven't been playing much. I've been playing through the. I play through the Wings each week. And then it's a week off this week for Thanksgiving, which I think is quite sweet. They broke it down into four wings rather than five. They've been, I guess we can talk about it later, but I haven't, like, what I haven't done is, I'm so lazy, I haven't, like, really tried to make any new decks work with the new cards. I'm just sort of waiting for other people to refine them and then copy them. I've been watching a lot of it on stream, to be fair. Like, I think you and I both watched Reyna from Tempo Storm playing that new Flood Warlock deck, which used those Reliquary Seeker cards that everyone said was complete dumpster, including us, and turns out they're all right. But I'm kind of waiting for, like, we've got a lot of stuff planned for the website in December, and I'm kind of already, like, now trying to think, like, what's going to be my Christmas game? I always like to have one game at Christmas that I can just sort of play and devote a lot of time not speaking to my family or dealing with any other sort of commitments and just lock myself away.
Well, you have a lot to choose from this year, I think.
Yeah, I think maybe Witcher, because I played a bit of it and then got distracted by other stuff.
It's interesting to me because I feel like The Witcher 3, arguably playing it now after everything, like after it's been out for so long, is a better experience than playing it on launch to a probably not insignificant degree, because they made all these changes in that 16 updates that they did that's not even content-wise. Like, when I was playing the game, I had this huge problem with the inventory management and carrying crafting items and all that sort of thing, and they patched that.
They tweaked some dialogue and stuff as well. It was pretty extensive changes. I remember, like, Andy, who writes the news for us, would be writing the stories about the patches, and some of them were,
super extensive,
yeah.
A couple gigs, some of them, yeah.
You wonder if it'd be the same with, like, Fallout. Maybe it's the sort of game, like, they've already patched it once this week now, the first patch
out. Yeah, most open-world games, I would say, and again, we can talk about this later, just play them, like, months later, and you're going to have a better time overall.
Which is weird, because developers push pre-orders so much, and it's almost like, you know, we don't really support pre-ordering a game before you read about it and you see reviews and that sort of thing. But also, it's just kind of the worst time to buy a game like that is at the very beginning of its life.
It's
just going to get better, or you're going to know it's not worth it.
Did you run into any kind of significant quest bugs when you were playing Fallout, James?
Actually, I was fuming about this last night, and maybe this is also why I'm so angry, but I forgot it about already. There's one of the final quests. It took like about an hour to do this big sprawling mission, and it's right at the end. When I went to turn the quest in, the quest giver was like stuck on this line of dialogue that was referencing something an hour earlier, and I was like, "Wait, what's going on here?" So I couldn't turn this quest in. I had to redo it all, and it's this kind of emotional, like messed up quest. And it was like this really interesting moment, and I was like, "Oh shit, I got to do this again." And it was like lost on me the second time. That was a huge bummer. Took the wind out of my sails, some people still like are just waiting for patches to come out before they can like continue some of their saves. So,
that's why I never played GTA 5. Actually, there was a game breaking, unavoidable, completely repeatable bug that some people had, including myself. Where when you got to the first heist in GTA 5, the first like story heist, if you tried to shoot a gun out of a moving car, the whole game would just crash desktop.
That's so weird. Every time.
Didn't matter what car, didn't matter what part of the heist. If you were in a heist and you tried to shoot a gun out of a car, the game just stopped. And it happened literally every time I played the game. And I got through to the point where you're in a car in the heist for the third time after having done the mission perfectly the first three times, and it crashed. And I was just like, I'm just going to wait for this to get patched. And I never heard it getting patched, and I never went back to the game. It's debilitating when that happens.
Mm-hmm. There was like a bug in MGS where like if you took Quiet on one of two missions, she would like, would she disappear forever, or the game would lock out or something like that. It's bad anyway. Like, and then it took a while for them to patch it.
Oh,
I had to leave like a sticky on my desktop the whole time saying, do not take her on mission 42 or whatever, because I'm so absent-minded. Yeah.
So I'll talk about a game that I haven't been playing all week, but I played this week and probably will never go back to. So I feel like it's a good time to talk about it. Sure. Well, I won't say never, but last week I talked a little bit about how the Paladins beta had started that Tuesday, and I played a bit of Paladins, and I had played it previously at TwitchCon. This is Hi-Rez's new game. It's like a first-person shooter by Hi-Rez, but it's got MOBA elements in it and that sort of thing. And I just am really not interested in it. Like, I played it, and it just, it was very beautiful, and it was very cool aesthetic, and it was a cool idea, and I liked kind of what they were doing with making it more about control points rather than, like, these long gunfights. Mm-hmm. But the gunplay itself was just kind of so limp that it didn't make me want to keep playing.
Guy from Hi-Rez just really sadly shots the stream.
Oh, no.
Just shots the tab.
Keep watching. It's okay.
But the funny thing is, one of our video guys, our videographer Max, had been playing Paladins too, and he's a big Smite guy. Yeah. And he came up to me in the office last week and was like, have you been playing Paladins? And I was like, yeah, I really don't like it. And he was like, I think it's amazing. And we got into this conversation where me coming from a kind of TF2, I've been playing a lot of Overwatch, Dirty Bomb sort of mindset, I found this first-person shooter very lackluster. But him coming from a Smite mindset loved it. And he thought that if you look at it as a first-person shooter version of kind of what Smite brings, you can actually really, really enjoy it.
So it's what, team-based, what kind of colorful champion-style heroes?
Yeah, you level up, except there's this deck system where you unlock cards.
I thought it was a card, because you left a code for it on my desk. I thought it was some sort of card game.
Yeah, it's got cards in it, and then what you do is you make a deck for your character, and every time you level up, it gives you a choice between three cards, and those cards are level-ups to your abilities or your stats and stuff like that. So it's deck building mixed with RPG, mixed with shooter, and it actually works pretty well.
Doesn't Battlefront have like a card thing in it as well? Like you get a kind of card.
Yeah,
cards.
I don't know if it's like
that's a, like loadout. It's
I don't
like
think
in
you
between.
Build a deck. It's just like it's maybe like they're trying to evoke Hearthstone or something.
People hear unlockable cards and they just want it, you know. So yeah. I think they called it cards for that reason. But it's like a cool, fun game. It just really didn't appeal to me as a shooter, you know? And it's in closed beta right now, but they're giving out a lot of beta keys. We did a beta key giveaway last week.
Because it didn't feel satisfying, the actual shooting?
The actual shooting didn't feel satisfying, but if you come from a Smite background, maybe that's not a problem for you, you know? Because the actual, like, sword play in Smite is not this amazing, visceral experience, but it's still a fun game. So I'm sure that there are people that can enjoy it in that same sense. I just wasn't one of those people. It really it was pretty disappointing for me. But we'll see how it goes.
It's early on. Yeah.
Yeah, it just went into closed beta. I don't mean to just write it off right now at the beginning of its life.
Tom just like ripped paladins.
Nice try, guys.
Well, I mean, honestly, the thing that I think is most threatening to it is not even just the gameplay, but it's just it's entering into such a saturated market right now.
Are you still playing Overwatch like regularly then?
I think Overwatch is the game I play more than anything. I just don't want to talk about it on the stream because I feel like people are just going to get sick of hearing me talk about a game they're not allowed to play for the next 6 months.
Fair.
But yeah, I've been playing Overwatch constantly. It's
you should just
really
share your
fun.
Account with them, Tom. I'm sure that won't be a
problem. Yeah. I heard actually Blizzard already banned some people who were doing account sharing, but they were doing stupid enough to be like, if you give me $20, I'll let you use my account to play Overwatch for like an hour, which is just asking to get banned.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't want to talk about Overwatch forever because nobody wants to hear about a game they can't play. And Paladins is in closed beta also, but it's in more readily available closed beta. They seem to be giving out keys more actively than Blizzard is. And you can buy a Founders Pack right now for like $20 that gives you immediate access into the beta. So it is a game that people could be playing right now. I'm interested to see it evolve. I wish it the best because it's a really unique idea. It's just – it was not satisfying when I was playing it, unfortunately. So let's jump right along, though. I want to talk about – this is kind of a weird topic, but I want to talk about episodic games and specifically what happens if an episodic game gets canceled. Because last week, end of last week, the creators of Afro Samurai 2, which is an episodic kind of action-adventure game, canceled the game, canceled all future episodes – and said – and took the original off of Steam.
How many episodes had there been?
I think there was only one, and I think it came out in September.
I'm going to say tough shit.
Well, okay. I know. I'm not saying that we should cry over Afro Samurai 2 or its lack of game and, oh, how the world will suffer from never having seen it grow. But the interesting thing to me is that at the same time, today, the third episode of Minecraft Story Mode has come out, which – for the most part, people have been kind of negative on. Tyler really didn't like the first episode, not so much so that he didn't even go back to the second episode.
I think he described it as a blocky mess.
Yes, that was his actual word, just a blocky mess.
Get it?
So the question I have for you guys that I want to discuss is, does making an episodic game make the developers obligated to finish that episodic tale?
No.
Okay.
Well, I mean,
well,
if you think
stream's over, we can move on to the next topic.
Think
now.
About how TV works over here. Like, I'm obviously a visitor in your foreign country, but like, they'll make like six episodes of a show, and if by episode four it's not working out, they'll just shit can it then, won't they? Like, it's too.
Tim, you're making me sad about Firefly again.
You know, you sometimes get the smell of death on a program like quite early, like three episodes in, you go, I'm quite enjoying this, but I don't get the sense anyone else is, so I'm not going to commit any more of my time to it because you know you're going to reach an unsatisfying season one climax and then the show won't be brought back. I think with games, the bigger issue I think is there's so few examples of people doing episodic games correctly or even in a way that's interesting to the point where I'd say like the Telltale Walking Dead stuff and I guess Wolf Among Us, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
That and Life is Strange are the only really good examples I can kind of even think of, but maybe I don't play enough episodic stuff. But
coming out now, the Telltale, you know, is a great example because they do have also Sam and Max. You know, they've been doing episodic for a while correctly. But yeah, those are the big ones right now.
I feel like the Telltale formula, though, like as evidenced by like Game of Thrones hasn't really set the world alight. I think the reviews I've read, certainly our own, kind of suggested that it was pretty faithful but actually a bit too gloomy and drab and just didn't enjoy it.
Yeah, I played it, and it was just like trying to channel beats of the show.
Too hard?
Yeah.
I weirdly think that episodic, I think the because I remember speaking to quite a few developers about this when I was more into the idea, and it's an idea that's been floating around since, honestly, like the 2000s. People have talked about trying to make this a thing. But I think the expense of trying to do something episodically, the risk is actually almost even higher, and I can't really justify why I'm making that statement.
I get it. Like,
I tell you why. It's because you. So if you sell like a single copy of a game that's like $60 or whatever, you build your whole campaign around getting everyone in on day one and it being a big deal and a big launch and yada yada yada. With an episodic game, you have to maintain the interest over a series of purchases, and almost inevitably you're going to like leech audience away. So I think it doesn't seem like the industry as a whole is like super hot on the model, which is, I think, a pity, because I think loads of interesting stuff could be done, and I think Life is Strange showed that.
There seem to be a core group of developers that are doing it well, and it works for them, and then it does kind of struggle to spread out of that. ColinR88 in the chat points out the new King's Quest was also episodic, and that was a good example of episodic.
Yeah. We've only seen the first episode of that.
But don't you think as well, like, part of the problem is, like, the culture now of the way people consume things is they want to be at a... Episodic is like an example of like appointment to view or appointment to experience, whereas like now people with Netflix, they want to just like Jessica Jones comes out, they want to watch, a lot of people want to watch the whole thing in one weekend and just like no life it completely.
Yeah. But that's not a new concept.
Ability to do it is a newish thing.
I suppose, but I'm just saying that the desire to sit down and play a game all the way through is not unique to games in the way that it is becoming a new thing for TV, if that makes sense.
Basically, what I'm saying is people don't like waiting for shit.
No, yeah, and with most episodic games you see now, it's not, you're not waiting a week, you're waiting months. And I don't know, that's not, I mean, that's episodic, sure, but it's not episodic in the way that like we understand it as, you know, television trained people. And I think you're seeing...
You put yourself in a position as well of almost having to make it like old radio serials and have like huge cliffhangers at the end of everyone to try and get people to come back.
Yeah, you know? No, absolutely. And it's to the detriment of these games, I think. But,
will our heroes get out of the dastardly trap? Tune in next week. Yeah, it's that sort of thing.
Yeah, they're fine.
I get why they, like Telltale and other developers do that, though, is because it's almost like episodic games, from my standpoint, have always been like... early access for narrative games, right? Because they're developing these episodes typically, you know, while the first one's out, you know, like first one goes out and they're like chipping away at two, and they have like this just pretty horrid, Telltale's engine is pretty horrid, but they always have like some preview in the end that you can tell is just cobbled together from scraps of, you know, just like concepts and
quick draw something.
Yeah.
But see, that's the question I had, is because in going back to what I first asked, early access to me, if you put a game out in early access and you don't complete it, people get mad. People feel like you promised something to them and then you did not deliver. But that's different for episodic games, where if an episodic game is just bad and they don't finish the series, kind of it's okay. So it's not really like early access, in that sense at least, because you can decide that something is not worth the time and just stop. Is that – I guess it's because you are offering a cheaper product for, you know,
like
less content?
If it's well organized and, in, you know, controlling its budget as well, I should be able to say we are committed to making 6 episodes of this, which will resolve the story in some sort of fashion, rather than going, well, here's one, maybe there'll be more. that obviously would be
I think Telltale's early, I hate to just reference Telltale, but I don't know what
they are the developer.
But I think early on, like, you'd see that was like they were skirting by, you know, like hoping that enough people would buy their first episode. And you've seen them like change payment models on the PC and different platforms. I think consoles you can buy episode by episode, and PC you have to buy the whole season up front, at least through Steam. But, and now I think they're getting to a position, like with Minecraft, it's obvious they've developed a lot more of that up front. So I don't know. We'll see. It's. I don't think they're obligated. Anyone's obligated to finish, like, something that isn't making money, because games cost a lot of money and take a lot of time. It would be nice if they did.
Well, so then what about episodic games that continue but are kind of universally panned? Should they just kind of call and throw in the towel, even if they are making money? Like, I feel like Minecraft Story Mode is just printing money. People are going to buy that game because kids love Minecraft and people love Minecraft, and that's just going to do well. But is it kind of unfair almost for a developer like Telltale, who can afford to make bad games? That's kind of a loaded question.
Yeah,
I know,
there's probably some 12-year-olds out there who are just like, whoa, it's my favorite universe and things are happening in it and it's fine. And they don't really, you know, they're not Tyler sitting there in his corner just like, Minecraft, you know. But
isn't it like antithetical to what Minecraft is? Like Minecraft is about like you exploring a world and building stuff, and this is the thing where you're like basically straight.
Yeah, okay.
I never understood why there is a Minecraft story mode, like beyond like.
Because Minecraft prints money.
Yeah, we must extend the brand.
That's it. Yeah. I mean, that's it. I mean, yeah. I mean, ideally, Minecraft would just be Minecraft and perfect and eternal. But
Well, it's interesting, too, because the story mode, I mean, obviously none of us have played Minecraft story mode, but we can talk about it from a more outer perspective of this is a direct influence of Microsoft buying Mojang, right? In my opinion, you see Minecraft for Windows 10 version or whatever, and you see story mode, and these are things that probably wouldn't have happened if Minecraft hadn't been purchased for so much money.
If you could make, or if you could persuade Telltale to make one of their style of episodic games about any fictional universe, what would you choose?
I guess right now I'm kind of riding that wave, the Fargo wave. I think they could do like Fargo. A stylized, cool Fargo thing, right?
You want like a rated M Telltale game?
Oh,
put
yeah.
Put people in wood chippers and stuff?
Yeah, well, I'm talking about specifically about the series that everyone should watch on FX. I'm not getting paid, I promise. it's fantastic, and it's not obligated or beholden to like prior seasons, or it's just kind of independent.
You don't even
stories.
Have to have seen the movie, realistically.
No, it's just like here's 10 episodes, the show at least, of this thing happening. You know, in Minnesota.
It's better than Breaking Bad.
Oh.
A couple from the chat. It's Hockey Tom 71 says we need a Star Wars Telltale.
Nope.
No. Wow. That was
I'm
a
not into
reaction.
Okay.
Wait, people were talking earlier about the Star Wars extended universe and how they had blown it up.
Yeah. It's just gone.
How do you blow up an extended universe?
Retcon the hell out of it.
Yeah, but just saying like these things didn't happen.
Yeah. Everyone was kind of mad. Or not everyone, but, like, the people who read the books, like, they're just kind of mad.
But to me, like, the very idea of, like, that sort of extended universe is, like, stupid anyway. But, like, you can't just wish it away, can you? Can you?
I mean, they did, man.
I mean, you can always have your head canon.
Well, you could, but that's like saying you could just, all right, the prequels didn't happen either.
Right, but I guess, so the reasoning behind it is because they want to make future stuff, and they don't want to be beholden to these books that nobody read anyway.
But had the extended universe created a lot of problems canonically?
Yes, I think so. I don't know for sure because I don't know what the plot of the new movie is, but the extended universe talks a lot about like Han and Luke's kids and like where they are now, and I think that's going to be involved in the new series.
That does sound dumb.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the point of not wanting it to exist, but like when you say blow it up, they didn't actually say like, and it was all a dream. Like what is the actual mechanical process of? Is it
a press release.
Is it legal? Yeah, well, it's a letter, I guess. Same.
It's people being like, you know, all those books you loved and read, they just don't exist anymore. They are fun little stories that you can tell, but they're now basically fan fiction.
I feel like if you were reading those books, Wes, yeah, you knew what you were getting into.
Yeah.
Actually, Wes in the chat says they classified it as, quote, legacy stuff.
Legacy content. That is a classic description of anything that's like an embarrassment. You put the legacy content in the attic.
Yeah.
We've made some legacy content.
Basically.
I'm pretty sure.
Well, kind of jumping back to games, with relating that to games, League of Legends did a similar thing with all of their story. They just
they
said
have a story?
They had a story that actually, when I played League back near the beginning of the game, really loved. They used to release these like fake newspapers set in the world and like talk about all these events, and they'd use the events to introduce new characters. And then I think it was a year ago when they were updating a patch to the game, they just said, you know what? None of that happened. And they just said, there's actually no story in League of Legends. It's just a game. And I'm not sure 100% why they did that, but they just said, hey, sorry, all those things that you enjoyed reading just don't exist anymore.
Wait, but I thought they are back to like creating narrative stuff now, because they had that thing where the character died and then he came back, right?
Yeah, they're creating these kind of little events and stories within the characters specifically, but now like basically none of them relate to each other. Because the story of League of Legends used to be that there was this place called like the Summoners Institute, and these people were these great legends that would get summoned into battle, and you were actually a summoner and controlling a hero.
It's a weird line, isn't it, with games like that, games which like fundamentally don't actually need a story, but like I guess people feel compelled to. Maybe they would be weak without one.
That plot was one of the things that got me into League of Legends.
Well, what I'm thinking about specifically is like if you're playing, sorry to turn it back to Hearthstone, but if you're playing like the League of Explorers expansion, they've made this whole thing of like there are these four explorers and they're looking for a staff and da da da, and like I don't give a shit. Like, I don't care. I guess they just have to give it some flavour and some colour. But even, like, with the previous expansion, when it was, like, the Grand Tournament, the idea that there were all these, like, jousting characters are arriving, I never, like, thought about it in a logical way because it's just a card game on the
I think it's nice, like, to for some people to, I don't know, prescribe, like, the clicks and the you're hitting the number keys and, like, think that you're, or at least like feel like you're having an impact,
such a
narrative
role,
impact.
Such a role player.
Well, I mean, you know what I mean. Like, that's not what I would do. I don't play League of Legends and go, all right, fuck yeah, I'm gonna get like, this is my RPG.
I like the characters having lore. That's the weird thing. I just don't, I don't, I can't ascribe a story or thing like, or this game of Hearthstone I'm playing is part of this grander plot. It's, I mean, that's absurd.
Wasn't
the plot is some arsehole is trying to smash my face in and saying, well
that's
played
a good
every
enough
turn.
Plot. That's a
plot.
Good enough plot.
So before we move on to actually talking about Hearthstone, I just want to take a minute to highlight some of the amazing Telltale ideas that have come out of the chat right now.
We will score them out of 100.
So
each idea. I'll tell you what we would have reviewed them.
Marvel is an easy one.
Zero.
No, Marvel, it's almost too broad. It's too broad. So I think they would have bitten off more than they could chew and it would have ended up at 74.
Multiple requests for an adult triple X Telltale game.
No.
Well, they need to give a more specific genre.
They need a better engine first.
Yeah. They need to say, like, it should be like the Basic Instinct game.
Oh, no. Doctor Who.
Can't just say porn.
I just, all these
Doctor Who would be
franchises and brands.
Doctor Who would be terrible. BBC would meddle in it too
Doctor
much.
Doctor Who is just bad now.
Like 40. It's so bad,
it's
right?
It's bad now. And sorry, everybody.
I like Peter Capaldi, but he sucks as the Doctor. Yeah.
Actually, I think this season is pretty good. I think that this season is pulling it back a little bit, but we don't have
PC
to get
game.
You know, like,
PC game.
Do you know, this is my girlfriend says this, but you know, like, how they try and, like, make him less of a creepy old dude? It's like they put sunglasses on him, like, because that worked for fucking David Caruso, right? Sorry for swearing.
Yeah,
I don't think we're not going to
swear on this one. They give him the glasses and the guitar this season, like, of Doctor Who.
Who likes the old guy with a guitar? Like, what is he, like, Dire Straits? It's awful.
Well, we can move right along. Let's talk about Hearthstone now.
Oh, God.
Is that all the ideas? I thought that was going to be better.
No, there's more. There's Looney Tunes, Invader Zim.
Why?
JBJ Blaze says Hatred, the Telltale game.
Oh, God.
64 out of 100.
Looney Tunes could be fun, like little 5-minute vignettes, maybe. Like.
Futurama is actually not a good bad
Futurama
idea.
Futurama is a good show.
I think Futurama would be a good one.
82 Futurama.
What about original ideas?
They already did Strong Bad, so they've done cartoon ones before.
Yeah.
I think those would be good.
I would like Telltale to do the Inspect the Morse series, which is a British police drama.
I wanted them to do really Sherlock Holmes in the 22nd century, if anybody remembers that cartoon show.
I'm thinking...
Why do you like bad things, Tom?
They're more fun than good things.
Telltale does Infinite Jest.
You couldn't resist it, could you? This is a man who...
Telltale is Moby Dick.
Right, we'll do this story then. In James's job interview, he had his bookshelf in the background with Infinite
Jest. You think that was
carefully
an accident?
Placed. Yeah. I didn't believe it for a second.
Okay, let's talk about Hearthstone, though. So
we'll make it brief because I've already banged on about it.
Yeah, well. So those of you who don't know, we're now in the third week of the League of Explorers, which is the next expansion for Hearthstone. Got announced at BlizzCon and came out a week later. This week, since it's Thanksgiving this Thursday, they are not doing a week. They're taking a break, and then there'll be two more wings. But I want to take a minute to talk about this, Tim, because when they first announced the expansion at BlizzCon, we were both pretty skeptical of it. And I think rightfully so, because the last couple expansions hadn't really...
You were quite enthusiastic, Tom.
I thought it was very cool, and I still maintain that I think it's one of the best... Aesthetically, it's probably the best thing that they've done for the game. It is beautiful. The music
really
is great. The art is great. The jokes and the characters and the designs are just amazing. It's really, really good. But I was really skeptical of whether that would actually help kind of the underlying problems of the game. And the last 2 weeks, I think it has. There's been all these crazy new decks. There's been new archetypes. It's really been an impressive influx of life into the game.
I think what we didn't kind of grasp at the time, perhaps unsurprisingly, was like what an effect like a couple of significant cards could have. And you've seen, like, with Reno Jackson 2 weeks ago, we wrote a story on the site about how it was probably the most powerful card since Emperor Thorizon. He's a card that he commits you to running not many duplicates in your deck, but if you can fulfill that criteria when you play him, he'll completely heal you. So he's like a countermeasure. To decks which are super aggressive, which was one of the big kind of chief complaints amongst the community. Although he hasn't probably done enough still to like quell aggro druid, and there's like a new aggro shaman
and a new aggro warlock. Thank you, Reynad, for both of those
and
decks.
I think those decks are probably quite reprehensible. Although, like, I saw someone calling him Chemo Jackson instead of Reno Jackson in pretty bad taste because he was meant to cure the cancer of the ladder deck.
Oh, man.
Yeah. The other card released last week, Brown Bronzebeard, is one which doubles your battle cry effects. I've been playing around with that a bit in Dragon Priest. Fun.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun interactions. I don't know. I think we were wrong that the cards wouldn't have enough of an effect on the metagame. I think we are still right, if you feel the same way, that the game still needs like a wider shake-up. There's still like a lot of cards which are problematic. You're kind of mad scientists of this world, your death spikes of this world that are just too strong.
Yeah, and I think that we're going to see that definitely more in the next, like, a month from now. We're going to see the meta calm down once all the cards are out. I agree with that. But I think that the cards have had a more significant effect on immediately on the game than I expected them to.
Yeah, definitely.
Which I'm very happy about. But I also wanted to talk about just the discover mechanic in general, how much I like it. So those of you who don't know, this new mechanic that they added to the game is called Discover, and it gives you an option of three cards just randomly, and then you get to pick one of those cards to put in your hand. And it'll always be like, discover a three-cost card, and then it'll show you three cards that could either be from the neutrals or your class cards. And then you pick one and you put it in your hand. And so it's basically drawing, but drawing from outside your deck.
It's not like a completely random draw either, because it's weighted towards class cards, which are...
They're four times more likely.
By and large, are better than neutral cards.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a stronger chance of getting a good outcome.
And the funny thing about this is that there's a lot of random effects in the game already, and especially put a random card in your hand, like Unstable Portal. But they were always kind of very hostile random, right? Like they were either very, very good for you or very, very bad for you, and you never really got those draws that were like, oh, this is like an okay draw in this moment. And I think
it's more that you... I disagree with that. I think you just remember the ones where it's like super bad or super good. There is actually quite a bit of mess stuff in between.
Yeah, it could be a confirmation bias for sure.
Shredder oftentimes will just drop you a 1-1 or a 2-1, right? But it's the time you got Doomsayer, the time you got Millhouse that you remember.
Right, and the thing that people were praising about Discover and that I still really like about it is that it's the randomness of random cards, but then also the skill of which card do I want right now.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is I had this moment where I played an Unstable Portal, and I had a moment like, wait, why can't I pick which one of the three cards I want to draw? Like, I forgot. Discover is such a cool, unique, interesting mechanic that it makes all those cards that, like, Web Spinner and Unstable Portal that put a random card in your hand just feel old and obsolete almost.
I think the really smart thing about the way Discover works is they were really wary about giving people ways to draw more cards from their own deck, because one of the what's consistently led to decks being degenerate is the ability to draw through the entire deck, so that you have like, you put a win condition in it that's like a particular combo or something happening, and if you can see your whole deck, you can almost invariably activate that combo. So what Discover does is, because you're picking from a huge random pool, you're not being able to get closer to that win condition on a more kind of guaranteed basis, but you are still getting more card draw. Because I think one of the big reasons people get frustrated and salty playing Hearthstone is those times when you feel, there's nothing I can do about this, I have no answers, I've just drawn badly, so therefore I'm going to lose this game.
Yeah.
And I think Discover mitigates against that a little bit, because it gives you extra ways out of situations or to improve, even if you're ahead. I think it's definitely been the best new keyword they've added to the game.
Yeah, well, that's a competition of two, though.
What, Death Rattle and Inspire?
Yeah. Death, just Inspire.
Oh, Death Rattle.
Death Rattle's been in it. It's just that Undertaker.
Didn't they add any other new ones in?
No. They did Joust, but that's not a keyword. So, James, what do you think is the best card of the set? he asked mockingly.
Actually, I did the gallery for you guys, like, when you guys were at BlizzCon, so let me think. there were some really stupid puns that I remember. Murloc puns.
Yeah,
every fin is awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, that was good.
That's your pick?
That's not out, unfortunately, but that is going to be fun.
Oh,
yeah.
What's
the other Murloc pun?
Every it's another fin.
Every fin is awesome.
Any fin can happen. Ah. That's what it is.
There it is.
Every fin is awesome is a better pun.
It is. It's also a reference to the Lego movie.
Yeah,
so
it's has some layers.
And it's got two layers.
Two layers.
Two thick layers, though. Okay. So, James, when we first talked about this set in our BlizzCon episode when we had Tim on, I think it was 2 weeks ago, we talked about the idea of is this ever going to get others into the game, right? New players into the game. And you, I believe, at the time said you had pretty much no interest.
That's not entirely true. I have a lot of interest in getting into Hearthstone. Like, I'm sad that this conversation you guys just had felt like 50 years. because, I like the idea of the game. I remember when it first came out, I played a decent amount of it and was fine at it. But the more they add, it just convolutes the game more and it makes it harder to get in because I think Tim was saying, I said, it's just expensive to get into Hearthstone. And the counter argument is, well, it's free to play. You can earn those cards. But I think even you have admitted that by now it's kind of hard to.
I spent a ton on it. I must have spent I spent hundreds of dollars.
Yeah. And like the adventures themselves are like, can you build cards that you get in the adventures?
No.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are $20 by themselves.
25 for the first two, 20 for this one.
Yeah. So, I mean.
Unless you want to buy them with in-game gold.
And some of those cards, from what you guys have talked about or what I've kind of absorbed is that some of the cards in the adventures are pretty vital.
Yeah, they are.
So, I mean, that alone is, $60-$80 to.
Well, so the thing that a lot of people who.
I gave you those free five packs.
Yeah, five packs. Got some good stuff.
That's more a start, yeah. But the thing that a lot of people where Hearthstone is their only game don't realize, or only card game, first card game, that sort of thing, don't realize, is that Hearthstone is one of the least pay-to-win card games ever made. That's not to say that being said, basically, fundamentally, every card game is pay to win. But Hearthstone being a card game where you can earn the cards without spending real money makes it unique in the world of card games. Mm-hmm. Magic the Gathering, for example, you literally, it's pay to win because you literally cannot get the cards unless you pay money for them or trade old cards or something like that or sell a kidney, Mm-hmm. There was a moment when I was watching Brian Kibler, who's now a Hearthstone pro and a Magic the Gathering, longtime Magic the Gathering professional player, and somebody asked him on stream, this was a while ago, like maybe a year ago when he was streaming, and somebody asked him, I'm looking for a competitive Magic deck for around $250. And he said, I don't think you can find that. Jeez. I think that you can't find a competitive Magic deck for $250. Very offhanded, just like kind of normal. So when
with Magic though, you can buy the cards one by one, right? You can buy singles.
You can buy singles, yes, which is a huge difference as well.
Yeah, I feel like Hearthstone would benefit from a system whereby, I think I said this before, so I won't belabor the point, but I definitely feel like a system whereby you could buy off the shelf decks for like $15 for a good deck that was ladder viable, but maybe not the most refined ladder deck, but was close to it. Mm-hmm. And then you could tweak it with either other cards you had, or you could buy a couple of one-offs to add in. Or you could just go, actually, I'm really committed to playing, I don't know, let's say Secret fucking Paladin. and then you can go out and just, buy two Mysterious Challenges and whatever. Because it's that sense of, I still get it now of, with a new set, if there's a particular couple of cards I want, I go, I'm going to have to maybe buy, 50 packs just to craft these two legendaries that I want.
Which is silly.
Which feels like a little egregious to me.
Yeah, it is strange, but at the same time, if they were selling a legendary for $20, would people be complaining about that too?
Probably.
Yeah. And just to clarify.
I don't think that's the price for starters. Yeah.
Just to clarify to anybody wondering, I am talking about the physical card game of Magic the Gathering. In the digital versions, except for Magic Online, you can buy packs with in-game currency.
Do you think I can persuade my other half to learn Magic the Gathering over Christmas? Yes or no?
We've got
sent some cards, and each time I've suggested we play it, honestly, I might as well have suggested something much more.
How much do you like each other?
Very much.
How much respect can you lose for each other, and how much can you start hating each other before that becomes too much?
We're both very competitive.
Okay, then I'd steer away from it, honestly.
Be careful.
It's an pretty easy game to learn just how to play, but
it does not look easy.
Deck building and the really intense strategy of Magic does not come easy. It's a very simple game fundamentally, but once you get into things started, like the stack. Do you know what the stack is?
No.
It's this.
I know what tapping is. And I know what, like, land is.
But the stack is this amazing thing that since it's not a video game and they couldn't just, you know, write rules and code to make decide how effects interact with each other, every time you play a card, it goes on the stack, and then somebody can respond to that card with a different card, and that goes on the stack, and they keep stacking up. And then you resolve the effects in the order of, like, top to bottom of the stack. And that's how – it's basically this way to simplify incredibly complex interactions within the game. And that's part of the fact that the game has just been around so long.
How do you adjudicate on a dispute then if there's only two of you and you don't have, like, a magic accredited referee in your apartment in San Francisco, say?
Well, I think you don't be an asshole in that case, but –
Well, this isn't going to work. Yeah.
Yeah, no, if you're just playing with friends, it's just like the honor system and don't be a jerk. And if you're playing at competitions and stuff, then it's – there are accredited referees to determine that sort of thing. But let's jump along. We've talked about card games. I for the record, I love card games. I could talk about card games forever. But we can not talk about card games forever for the sake of everyone who doesn't want to be taking a nap during this hour and a half. Let's talk about Black Friday. Yeah, James is just ready for bed now. Black Friday is this Friday. I almost said this Thursday, which would just have been embarrassing given the name.
Next year it would be like Grey Thursday.
It's just turned into Black Friday Juice November. Wednesday. Every year it gets earlier. For those of you who don't know, this Thursday is Thanksgiving in the United States, which means that Friday is Black Friday, which means all the retail stores and now online do these huge sales. Usually, before it was Cyber Monday was when all the digital deals would happen.
Oh, that's still a thing.
It's still a thing, but like last year I remember Black Friday, actually most of the good deals were the week leading up to Black Friday. And then Black Friday came and it was kind of disappointing.
Well, we've been doing a regular deals post on the site.
Yep. Yeah.
We have like a Black Friday hub, which is, you know, we try and through our hardware section and stuff provide good buying advice, let you know when things are on sale that we think are cool.
Yeah. And we'll keep updating that.
Yeah, well, even though we're basically just not going to let Wes eat any turkey or stuff.
He'll just be monitoring
his family. He just has to find SSD deals.
Oh, God.
But we'll all be helping.
But one of the deals that we actually couldn't put on the post because it was only a day long, I really want to talk about because I was really, really interested in this deal I saw on the Steam front page yesterday.
Yeah.
Where they were selling a Steam machine, Cyber, S-Y-B-E-R, which is a PC builder, was selling a PC for $300. And it was usually $500, but for just yesterday, they had two $100 rebates for it.
What was the spec?
The specs were it had an i3-4160, which is like, you know, a fine processor. It's not a very good one, but it's okay. It's a budget machine. A GTX 750, which is definitely an old graphics card. Yeah. You know, it was budget when the 700 line came out. 4 gigs of RAM, 500 gig hard drive, and a Steam controller, which is $50 on its own.
Hmm.
So, by all means, not a very good computer.
No.
But also, one of the only pre-built machines I have ever seen that could easily match up against a console. Pricing. $300 with a controller, right? That's what you get. And I thought it was interesting because do you think this is the year where people start buying stuff like that for holiday seasons and holiday gifts?
No.
Can you finally buy a 300? You guys just say no to every question I ask. Literally, this is the most negative stream.
No, it's that's what you get when you invite me on.
I'm a grump. I might smile a lot, but I'm a grump.
I feel like each time you mention Steam machines, I have to be reminded that they're a thing. And I was someone who was fairly enthusiastic about the idea of it because I'm not like a technical whiz at all. Like Wes, the idea of having something pre-built for me is fine. Like, I'm not a snob about that stuff at all. Like, I don't mind.
Yeah, and I personally wouldn't buy a pre-built machine just because I've become very comfortable building a PC. Mm-hmm. But I totally understand. No. It's not a shame thing at all because I was going to say I completely understand why somebody would buy a pre-built machine because, honest to God, building a computer is kind of scary, and it's difficult, and it's not a simple thing, and it's really easy to just break something.
Wes built my American PC for me and bled on it while he was building. So there's danger.
The
IO
panel,
involved.
Probably. Yeah, yeah.
It's the final step.
And so I while I wouldn't do it myself, I totally understand and I sympathize with people who just want to buy a machine that works, and that's what a $300 Steam machine that you're not really meant to upgrade.
Especially building a PC that's tiny is not easy either. But yeah,
I feel like circa when Vive comes out. The idea of like bundled things, which are like Vive plus PC plus Steam controller,
right,
could be more of a thing if that suddenly explodes in popularity in a way which maybe we're not sure that it will.
Yeah, the thing is, like, people,
there'll be people who want to experience that thing,
yeah,
who won't want to build a PC for sure.
And I understand. I love PC gaming, obviously, and I think it's the best platform. But I
keep playing to the gallery.
Well, I mean, it's the best platform, bar none. But when you still, the consoles are 100% more convenient for someone for that, for what, like, the Steam machine is
for plug and play. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And you know, that PC sounds like a piece of shit, to be frank. Like,
it's not very good. But it'll play games.
On paper,
the guy who bought that PC just shutting his browser now.
on paper, it might be like able to stand up to an Xbox or a PlayStation 4 or whatever.
No one's optimizing for that.
Yeah, but no one's optimizing for that. So, I mean, Battlefront looks amazing on the PS4. My roommate has it, and he's been playing it all week. And I'm like, Jesus, that looks great. And I play it on the PC. I'm like, this looks really good too. But my PC is like 1,000 times more powerful, and it's like, you know, running at a similar frame rate with similar, you know, graphical options. And that's because, yeah, like, people are optimizing games for specific platforms.
Set target,
yeah. Proprietary hardware that they don't have to worry about. Like, when it comes to something like that, they're developing Battlefront, they're not going to say, oh, let's accommodate for every GPU and every. And, like, no matter how easy you make it to buy a pre-built PC, the fact remains that it's a variable hardware, and it's, you know, games aren't going to run as easy. And, like, navigating the Steam store and installing games and all that stuff is still somewhat, you know, opaque to the casual, or at least, like, you know, plug-and-play audience. So it's – I don't know. I don't think PC gaming needs to ever try and be console gaming. I think maybe when – like you were saying, VR comes out, you know, they can opt for more convenience. But I bet, you know, as soon as VR becomes mainstream, like, the next round of consoles will probably try and accommodate for that power and also make it super easy to plug and play.
Sony has, like, Morpheus coming, which is, I think, I think they dumped the Morpheus name because it's not 1998.
It's kind of dumb. Yeah.
So it's just, I think it's just called Sony VR now or something. Or
yeah.
PlayStation VR.
But I mean, so I think what I tried to get at, and okay, what I was immediately shot down by before James went on a rant about how consoles are clearly better than PCs.
Whoa!
Can we, like, can he go back to intern? Is that a thing we could do? No.
I'll send you both back if you don't.
That's fair. Tim laying down the law there. No, so the point I was trying to get at, though, is that to me this is a turning point. Right? Mm-hmm. This is the first time that I've
ever... That $300 PC is the turning point?
Well, to a degree, yes. Because it's not a very good PC. And like you said, I do agree, James, that PCs at this point in time are still too complicated,
right,
too much work to really be just like a grab, plug, and play sort of thing, even at the similar price point. But to me, this represents a moment where it's not unrealistic that that might be a thing. And it's not unrealistic that that PCs could be that way a year or two down the line.
To me, there's almost there's a kind of separate – I don't know how much we want to talk about this sort of stuff, but there's like a separate question, which is that – so the previous console model was, what, like 10 years long, PlayStation
like
3 and Xbox 360? And yeah. I'm not sure amongst those – amongst, like, you know, you look at Microsoft, how much they're trying to make – moves to entrench themselves back in, they call it, you know, the Windows gaming space.
Right.
I'm not sure how much appetite Sony will have for launching a new box. So given that you're not going to be getting this kind of every 5 years or every 10 years refresh of the console thing, like PC stuff, even though, like, as James, you completely correctly said, developers having to work to a variable platform and it's tougher to optimize, and therefore, like, the gains you might expect in terms of performance over these simple boxes aren't always as big as you would hope they would be. And then sometimes you, in fact, get situations like you have with Batman where,
yeah,
they end up ludicrously, you know, the PC version being worse or less stable. But extrapolate from here where we are now to like 2-3 years down the line of like consistent improvements in graphic card technology and all the other kind of PC components, and it's easy to see that at that point it becomes like pretty compelling for, like, if you want to play multi-format stuff, you'd be kind of nuts not to be doing it on PC, right?
Yeah, Yeah, and hopefully that'll happen too, and hopefully that gap will spread.
Yeah.
VR will help it'll make that gap bigger between PC and console, because I think there's going to be a point where, like, games are just not going to run nearly as well on console in VR, ever.
Oh, yeah. The fact as well, I would say, like, and this is another thing, like, the Windows 10 has been, like, I would say mostly a success versus, like, the previous debacle.
It has.
Is significant, right? Like, if they had dropped the ball again, it would have, I think.
But that's what Microsoft does, is every other OS is terrible and every other OS is great, right?
Well, hopefully they're learning.
Windows 8 was awful. Windows 7 was good. Windows Vista was awful.
Yeah, that's not.
Windows XP was good. The one before Windows XP, I can't remember right now, was awful. Literally, they just go back and forth. They break something, they fix it.
You don't have good hopes for Windows 11.
I do not. Why do you think they skipped Windows 9? Yeah. They wanted to just get over the hump.
If anything, I think this $300 PC points out that I don't think, like I said, I stand by the point. I don't think PC gaming should ever try to be easy or like console, you know, like be console gaming. It's unique because it's weird and complex and allows for, you know, more developers to do more crazy stuff. But if anything, it says, well, hey, if I was in high school and I saw a $300 PC, I would lose my mind.
Yeah.
I would be like, oh my God, I can finally get into this hobby because, like, it's affordable. Like, if anything, the console cycle slowing down is going to mean that, like, there's less of a desire, less games being developed for high-end systems. There might be the Star Citizen here and there or whatever, but PC hardware that's capable of, like, playing the games you see being developed is going to be cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, and it's going to be easier and easier to get into the hobby. And, like, that's really exciting to me.
So the barrier to entry will keep shrinking.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I hope. I think VR is going to, like, I don't know, VR is going to be its own thing. But I think just PC gaming in general is going to be a lot easier to just hop into. I mean, I know so many – I used to teach high school. I knew so many students who were just, like, angry that they couldn't afford it. And including myself, I was an angry student once. I still am an angry guy, but I just hope it's more affordable and easy to get into because it's a fun hobby.
It is less daunting, even if it's not going to take over the market. It's a $300 PC seems so much more friendly, I guess.
He's got to be getting a cut of this deal.
I have said the developer of it once, and the deal was only yesterday. That PC is $500 again. So I just think it's interesting that it can hit that point, and I'm really excited to be seeing that happen.
What other stuff will you be buying on Black Friday? Anything?
I'm going to keep an eye out for a graphics card and some RAM. Okay. I really would like to upgrade to a 970. Right now I'm at a 760, which is like a totally decent card, but it's not quite enough for streaming from home and that sort of thing. I also have 8 gigs of RAM, and I'd really like to upgrade to 16. So there's some things here and there. I will not be upgrading my mouse or keyboard, which are both over a decade old, because I love them too much.
Oh, on the subject of keyboards, in the office move, this is a really boring story.
Okay.
Get ready.
Strap
in. Office move.
You know how to sell a story, Tim.
So I had this Corsair keyboard, and then in the process of the move, snapped off the little foot from it that made it angle up a bit from when you type, so then I couldn't use it anymore.
Was that the Corsair K70? Or?
I think so, yeah. And then, so Evan, who left, R.I.P., he's not dead, he's in Seattle. I took what I think was his keyboard, which is also a Corsair one, but different. Wes tells me it's the same type of switches, but the keys felt amazing. Like, I've consistently had, like, RSI in my, like, joints. And I'm not saying it cured them, but it cured them. But here's the sad thing. I think they were, like, I think it was super box fresh, this keyboard. And even now, in a few weeks, I can feel it's not quite as nice.
Gotta get a fresh one.
But I might
again.
Be imagining that. But my dream is, right, so to be, like, was it Jay-Z who would, like, put on a fresh pair of Nikes every day and then throw them away? Imagine every day you bust open a new keyboard.
Just typed open
on it
your
once.
Closet and there's keyboards
hanging from a
rotating.
Yeah, typed on it once and then just tossed it out. That new keyboard smell every morning.
Oh, that new keyboard smell.
I feel like the keyboard is, like, the least useful thing to do that with on a PC. Like, wouldn't you want to do that with, like, the mouse more?
The click, that first click?
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Depends.
You never forget your first click. Boat. Tom.
But PCs don't, or at least keyboards, I feel like, don't deteriorate very quickly. Maybe I'm wrong about that. It just feels
almost all of this is certainly in my mind.
The psychosis of Tim Clark.
That's like the idea of if you just donate all of your socks and wear your socks for one day, right? That's the lovely idea of just that feeling, that new sock feeling every day.
Well, you use at home like an absolute dumpster keyboard, right?
Yeah, it's not – okay. It's a fine specimen of a keyboard.
Yeah, uh-huh. It's the sort of keyboard you would get in like – a cyber cafe that would be used by terrorists to post messages to each other.
Oh, you know, with
really dusty windows and like the floor hasn't been cleaned in ages and they've got a couple of beige Dell PCs and these keyboards on which they're tapping out bomb threats.
And I've brought it up on the show before, but it's this old PS2 meaning PS/2 input keyboard. And I was actually at IEM San Jose Sunday, and I was hanging out with Jimmy Wizenhunt from Twitch, and I told him that I had this PS2 keyboard, and he just, like, he used to be a professional Counter-Strike player and a professional Quake player, and he just kind of looked at me like, what are you doing with your life? Because apparently old PS2 keyboards, you can't press more than 3 keys at once, mm-hmm. And he said that to me, and I was like, that's why that always happens.
There you go.
But I love it. I mean, like, I wanted to actually write on the site about this a little bit because the mouse and the keyboard, I have not replaced my mouse and my keyboard for at least 10 years. And they work fine. They're clean. I keep them in good
health. Got a cupboard full of keyboards there.
I know. And I've had many opportunity and the means and opportunity to upgrade multiple times. But the mouse and the keyboard are the literal thing that you interface with your computer, right? Uh-huh. That is your connection into the internet and the games and everything.
The keyboard yourself. I never thought about it like this, Tom.
So, like, I don't upgrade those because the idea of having to get used to a new thing is just daunting to me. I like the interface and I like the way that it reacts to, like, how I react to it and that stuff now. And I don't want to relearn a new thing. I'm lazy.
You've gone full lawnmower man with this keyboard in America.
I will not be looking for a new keyboard this Black Friday.
I don't understand. That's okay. We still like you.
But you, James, you going to buy anything?
Probably the complete Seinfeld collection on DVD.
Can you get that on DVD?
I don't know. Like, I don't really want anything. I'm considering buying a new PC or building a new PC, but I don't know. I'm not like dying to. Might be wait till VR comes out and I have something I know will work with that. I don't know.
I'd like a new microphone.
Oh, that might be it. That might be it. So there you go.
Well, let's stop talking about Black Friday. If you have any desire for things you're keeping an eye out for, please keep an eye out at PCGamer.com. We're going to have lots of Black Friday deals and that sort of thing. We're going to sort through everything.
It's in the nav bar. You can see it. It says Black Friday on PC Gamer.
Yes, you can. So if you go to PCGamer.com, we'll have all of the deals that we've seen there. And then also, if you – just as a sort of PSA, if you're looking at something from Amazon that you got to not from us, A, tell us about it because we'll put it up on the site as well if it's a good deal. But also – there's a site that I love called Camel Camel Camel. It's literally just camelcamelcamel.com. And you can put in an Amazon link and you'll be able to see the price history of that item for its entire lifespan. So if you're ever hesitant about buying something, because Amazon, you know, does those things where it's like 50% off and it's not actually 50% off. It's always 50% off. You'll be able to see if it's actually a deal. So don't get duped. Buy smart. We're going to try to help with that. And don't get ringered into like these fake Black Friday deals. Basically, that's my friendly public service announcement for the day and the show. But let's move on. Let's talk about some open world games because this year has really been the year of the open world game. We did a piece about the best open world games last week on the site, and like 80% of them were from the last year or two. Right. And part of that is that technology is getting to the point where they can be that. What do you guys think? Do you like seeing more open world games or do you kind of miss the on rails story that comes with older games of yore now? Because I feel like every major AAA release this year has been open world. You have Just Cause 3 is coming out next week. Assassin's Creed Syndicate was the most recent one last week. There was Fallout 4. There was, you know, if you want to go back farther, there's The Witcher, there's Dying Light, there's Metal Gear Solid 5, there's GTA 5. There were just so many open world games this year.
I think what's interesting to me is I think some of the best games are the ones which splice open world stuff with more traditional single player campaign stuff and those kind of beats. I was talking to, I think, Mark Darrow from BioWare at the start of the year about Dragon Age Inquisitions, which is a game which has like a kind of a big world bit that's like semi-open, and then obviously big kind of scripted story stuff as well. And if, when we were talking about it, I said to him, like, is this like, are we, because there was obviously like Fallout coming down the
right,
coming down the path, there was Witcher on the way, and then their game, and I sort of said, oh, is this, you know, is it just that it's like we're in this kind of weird golden age of RPGs? And he was like, he said like he felt more like that it was that Skyrim specifically had, with what it had done in open world, like opened the door for that sort of expansiveness. And that's, you only had to see like the response to that game and then Fallout, and partly that's that people love the Bethesda model, but I think people also love just generally now this freedom to explore really rich worlds in a way they couldn't before. The problem has always been the budget, I think, required to make those worlds actually feel genuinely live and populated. Yeah. Like Chris Livingston talked a bit about, like, I think we loved all the systems in MGS, mm-hmm. but that the actual world itself was quite sparse. Mm-hmm. And partly that's by necessity because you're in the kind of the hills of Afghanistan for a lot of it. But at some points, definitely it felt like actually more could be going on here. There's just some mm-hmm. wildlife and that's it. And then we've got like Just Cause is coming up, which is another big open world one. And that's a series which, you know, we'll find out in the review, but traditionally has made a big play out of how big the world is. But then I think struggled to fill it with meaningful stuff to do beyond just making some kind of towers explode and stuff.
Yeah, and something like Metal Gear Solid 5 is actually, in my mind, a really good balance of open world, because it's kind of not really an open world game in that there's a big open world for you to explore, but you're usually just like going to a point. There's nothing in Metal Gear Solid 5's world where not very much, where if you went off into a random direction where there was nothing on the map, you'd find something cool. You can find a few really small, insignificant things.
That's what's missing. But the brilliance of it is, I think they blend really well the specificity of going, here's this world, and we will put these missions around where, like, grab this guy or do. And a lot of them are repetitive, but like they provide you with like really kind of focused goals to do in that world. But you're right, when you go beyond those, it's a little bit quiet.
But that's why I liked what you were talking about, because that they do a really good job in Metal Gear Solid 5 of doing the missions, where then suddenly here's this kind of more linear thing with cut scenes, and there's the map is quarantined off, so you can only be in this sort of linear line.
Yeah.
And I really liked that blend, because I could go run around and kidnap people from other base in the open world and then go into a mission and have a story be told to me through that. And I really appreciated that balance.
There's like another issue in that if you look at a game like GTA, which had a budget of like what $500 million or something like that, was kind of speculated, hundreds of developers working on it, still people kind of, you know, want more from it. But look at the density of that world in terms of just like the art assets they've had to make, the amount of dialogue they've had to make, the kind of the tiny detail in terms of all like the signage and stuff. And a game like that comes out, and then if you want to then play in that genre, you have to kind of compete with that. And it's all very well to go, well, we can't because they've got like unbelievable amounts of resources. But that doesn't really, if you're a player, it's like, well, the game's going to cost $60, whichever one you're playing. So to use like the same comparison, like Just Cause has almost, I think, no chance of being able to offer the level of kind of fidelity and richness and story and yada, 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 all that sort of stuff. It's like the point I'm trying to make is, I think it's like a brutally competitive genre by its very nature. Like if you wanted to make like a standard FPS, right, and have like 12 levels and it lasts for 8 hours and then a multiplayer mode, right, the difference between the big budget version of that and the kind of middle and lower end is not, I think, as vast a scale as there is in open world. Like the top end open world stuff is just, I mean, you look even like Witcher, you'd say like they weren't a developer on the same par as like Rockstar, but like that had a huge budget and a huge team, and again, like set like an incredible bar that I think even like Fallout struggled to meet in terms of the world. I know you've played probably more of both. Like,
and
what do you think?
Real quick, just before James jumps in, the Witcher has created this incredible world, and it actually has a significantly smaller budget than most of those other open world games.
Well, there's a lot to talk about.
Quick, everything at once, go.
My perspective on open worlds, I don't know, it's mostly positive, but like, I don't know, a lot of these things are, these open worlds are aiming for different things. Metal Gear, I think its open world is 100% unnecessary.
Unnecessary.
It would be better off being a series of Ground Zeroes. Is that what the one was called?
The prequel.
Yeah.
But something like Just Cause to me feels like, I hated Just Cause 2, by the way. It feels like someone just said, here's some mountains and a nondescript, like, I think it's South American or something, locale, which basically functions as not a place to, like, feel like a contiguous world, but just a place to dink around. It might as well be like a big black white box, like, that you can just explode shit in. That to me is not an open world. An open world to me is something like more akin to The Witcher, where the world is built specifically to. I mean, The Witcher is one example. It's largely not. It's not very system driven, right? It's the NPCs aren't like on a schedule doing things. They're just like paper dolls standing around that say, "Oh, it's The Witcher." Oh, like when you walk by, yeah. And I mean. That's fine because it's a heavily narrative-based game, right? You can kind of wander around, but more often than not, like, you'll just stumble into a main quest or some kind of, like, big side quest. There's, like, some small things you can do, but they're pretty meaningless. The world there is to serve, like, this is there to feel like a world. Like, it's world-building. It's what's the word? Verisimilitude. It's to make it feel like this is a real place with, like, you know, in The Witcher 2, for example, it may not feel like a complete world because you're kind of going along these joined paths and it's like, well, yeah, I'm in a video game. In Witcher 3, it's there to serve the narrative. In something like Fallout 4 or Skyrim, it's like all systemic and it's like broke-ass, buggy all the time. But it's there to be like a legit playground, a legit sandbox where, you know, you can dink around with like certain NPCs and you can follow them and like role play being a peasant in Skyrim. A lot of people did that because they do things every day and like they actually harvest crops or something, you know. It's not empty. Everyone's doing something.
You could have role played like being a goat in Metal Gear. You could have just hung out with the goats.
Being the most boring goat on the planet.
Chris Livingston probably already did that.
But yeah, I mean, like, I think people are finally just like, they have either the budgets or at least like the collective history of video games to build on these systems now. And it's cool to see this. I think also they're like upfront a riskier endeavor to make an open world. But with stuff like Far Cry or Assassin's Creed, it's maybe – I don't know. I'm not a game developer. But it seems to me a little safer to iterate on than like rebuilding a whole new like linear path with scripting this and da-da-da-da-da-da, you know. You know, instead of starting over from scratch, you have little to work with. Like you have these existing systems you can iterate and tweak. And people kind of like to see that anyway, right? They like to see, oh, it's Assassin's Creed, but – you got a zip line. Whoa! And yeah, I don't know. I'm not sad about the open world renaissance, but
so the question I have then is there a difference between an open world and a sandbox world? Because the way
so.
You described Just Cause is that it makes it sound like a sandbox rather than whereas The Witcher felt like an open world to me because it felt like a world.
Right. I think. Yeah, I'm trying to write something about this actually. So, I'm trying to make a distinction between the two. Yeah, Just Cause is like more akin to. I think Grand Theft Auto is like the good version of Just Cause. It's
Grand Theft Auto is open world and Skyrim is sandbox. Is that what you're saying? Because I can sort of see the distinction you're making. If that's so, if not, I reject your thesis.
Well, I don't know what terminology to apply to these quite yet, but I feel like open world in the sense that it's an RPG and it's meant to make you feel like. Like Skyrim or The Witcher are sort of like these, like to give you a sense of this living world.
In something like a Skyrim, you have all these abilities and the creatures have this kind of slightly more complex behavior so that you can play with them and
right.
And exploit the systems in a way that I kind of feel like GTA in a funny way has got less and less sandboxy as it's gone on. It was much more like, I remember playing, you know, GTA 3, the kind of the first of the 3D ones and like completing missions by like, building roadblocks of like cars that I'd parked, and then because you knew with the way the route was going to go, and it would work. Like, whereas now it's kind of like there's so much of it more is scripted. It won't let you do that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to anyway.
Yeah, and I feel like people have like that's why the multiplayer has been so successful, because it just like plays to the strengths of just like dinking around with what they give you. Which honestly is not that much. Yeah, I think GTA is less of a sandbox and more of like a you can explode things in this very nice looking, like realistic place, as opposed to like a complex systemic, exploitable thing. So,
but I'm almost more annoyed by games that do kind of very, I'm just gonna say it, Assassin's Creed open worlds where. There's the GTA open world, which feels alive, and the Witcher open world, which feels alive. And then you have sandbox worlds, which kind of feel empty, but you have a lot of fun stuff to do in them. I feel like Assassin's Creed is almost the middle point where it's like there's this big open world and it kind of feels alive. But the only thing that you can really do in it is like pick up these arbitrarily placed eagle feathers and climb towers so that you can look over a point and somebody can be like, nah, and then you get a map piece. So it's this weird in-between where it's this live open world that all of the tasks and things you can do in it are just incredibly artificial within that
Assassin's
world.
Assassin's Creed, like, fundamentally is like a grind game, I think. You look at the map and it's got like a trillion things on divided into like X different types of activity, and you grind through them.
Yeah,
and the maps like there aren't the worlds in Assassin's Creed don't feel. I mean, people always talk about them like it's like traveling through history. I think they look like shit, but like they feel like remaps.
You think they look like shit?
The funniest.
I don't think they look very. I don't know. They don't the feel authentic.
The come on, 4 looked amazing. The pirates one.
Yeah. Oh, but okay. Did you play
4,
3?
You're on a goddamn pirate ship. Like that's different, right? You're in the ocean.
So the thing about
I love those sea shanties.
But I mean, like what you're doing in Assassin's Creed in most games is like running around. Oh, here's the thing I grab in this game. Except it's got like it's from the Renaissance or whatever. It all looks like I guess those things stand out and like destroy the illusion of the place. And everything starts to feel like, well, this place was just made for me to like do bad platforming on.
I got into Assassin's Creed 3, and it puts you into Boston, and you go up
3,
to your
3's the worst.
Okay, so 3 is the only one I've actually beaten, because
why?
And I was so bitter at that game. Wait, I'm gonna vent for just a moment.
go.
I'm gonna rest my eyes.
3 has that Captain Kidd's treasure thing where you pick up the Captain Kidd's trinkets, and if you get enough of the trinkets, and this old crazy dude gives you a mission, and then you go to the mission, you get a map piece for Captain Kidd's treasure. And if you do all of the Captain Kidd's trinkets and treasure pieces, you get a mission where you go find his treasure, and then you unlock this pirate outfit, right? And I love pirates. And so the entire game, I was like,
I love pirates.
Fuck yeah. Like, I want to be a pirate. Like, all I want to do in this game is
run around
as a pirate.
Why didn't you just play Assassin's Creed 4?
So here's where I hate Assassin's Creed. I was really enjoying Assassin's Creed 3. It was buggy as hell. It was terrible story, but I was enjoying the
so
kind of the
boring
loop
stuff.
Of it.
It's so boring.
Yeah, but anyway, I become a pirate and I run around and I'm being a pirate and I'm running around the ship and I'm enjoying the hell out of it. I'm like, yeah, I'm finally a pirate. Literally the next day, they announced Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag and announced it was all about pirates, and I was livid. I was like, I'm never playing another Assassin's Creed game again, because next they're going to like make me be able to be a space marine, and then the next thing they're going to announce a space marine game, and I'm just going to hate the world.
I think games as a whole have got you quite well covered on the space marine front, if that's what you're hanging on.
It's true. But Assassin's Creed 3 I thought was funny, because you would get into I got into Boston and I went up to the first like bell tower thing, and I looked over, and the first thing I thought of was, wow, I didn't know Boston was so foggy all the time. And it's what you were saying, where they had the engine just couldn't handle the graphics in that game, and they had the draw distance down so much that Boston, New York, the forest outside of New York, all just, man, they're just foggy constantly in the past. I had no idea.
Not for crystal blue seas, beautiful green trees. Lovely.
Yeah, I'm bitter towards Assassin's Creed, even if this one is fun or not, I don't know, but I just can't do it, because they're going to string me along, and then they're going to make a game about whatever they strung me along with.
I feel like I'm one-off with Assassin's Creed. Although I didn't like Unity, and I don't much care for Syndicate either.
I was just so bitter, man. Like, I just felt like I got bait and switched. It was awful. This is like a scarring experience I had with this game.
Aren't you healed now? Couldn't you go back and play 4? It's really good.
I could, but I kind of don't want to out of spite.
That your men, like, when you get on your ship, go, aha! And stuff like that, like, because they're so pleased to see you.
I just went back and played Sid Meier's Pirates, and that drowned my sorrows in that. Let's open it up to some questions from Twitch chat, though. If you have any big questions for us or about anything this week in PC gaming, please let us know. I'm sorry, I'm just watching our... There's a mouse just, like, dangling around the screen, and it's very interesting. it's very distracting. Anyway, if you have any questions for us about anything on this week in PC gaming, please tag us with @PCGamer in the Twitch chat, and we will answer your questions. Once again, if you're watching on YouTube or on iTunes or on the site or anything like that, just come to twitch.tv/PCGamer at 1 p.m. Pacific time on Tuesdays, and you'll be able to answer your questions live with us right now. Or we'll be able to answer your question. Either one, really. Billy Bobble asks, can James be the only game reviewer from now on, please?
No,
please. That's interesting.
I think it's just I'm fine with that.
I think I said something mean about Assassin's Creed, and someone agreed with me. So.
Okay. Mm. Fido asks, can you dress up as a pirate next week, Tom? Actually, the funny thing is I can. I was a pirate for Halloween, so I have that outfit. But this room is hot as blazes.
Yeah.
So we might not want to do that until we get an air conditioning situation figured out. Some more. HockeyTom71 asks, what's going on with MMOs? That's a good question. I mean, recently Guild Wars got its expansion. WildStar went free to play and then kind of fell off the face of the earth. I'm not sure how that transition went. I hear that the new Star Wars Galaxies expansion does a lot of good things for the game. I hear that Elder Scrolls is doing okay. I think MMOs are actually in a pretty good state right now.
Just had the expansion for Final Fantasy 13 as well, Heaven's Ward, I think it's called. Just came out like a week ago.
Yeah. Zero4Dowie asks, are any of you excited for Hearts of Iron 4 or Stellaris? Hearts of Iron 4, these are both Paradox's games. I don't know much about Hearts of Iron 4, but Stellaris, they came into the office actually last week and showed me Stellaris, and I think it looks really cool. It was one of the first kind of grand strategy games that I was like, I kind of want to play this. Yeah. This
is that the one you're playing in the boardroom?
Yeah, it was that one.
I watched through the window for a little bit.
It's a cool game. It's very pretty. And I like that it's not just like a 4X game. Paradox doesn't really make 4X games. They make grand strategy, which is this weird... weird difference, but it's important to how you actually play the game and what your goals are and that sort of thing. Either of you guys played Crusader Kings or Europa Universalis 4? Man, I hate that name.
I dabbled in Crusader Kings 2 because I read something about it and how systemically interesting it is, but it's also dense. Those take time to learn.
Max Ursa asks, Tim, how about a Telltale game of The Sweeney?
Yeah, well, the original Sweeney or the remake movie.
Well, explain both, because I don't know what those are.
Yeah, we're lost. Come on.
The original Sweeney was John Thor and was it Dennis Waterman? I think two basically like, and they played like Cockney detectives in London during, I guess, the late 70s. It was all kind of like birds and geezers and pints and fags and smashing up criminals. I was born in London-ish suburbs, but I'm not very authentic as a geezer. But yeah, maybe. The remake, I think, was like Ray Winston and that rapper Plan B, I think, playing... it was bad. I say it was bad. It was fine. Like, I watched it on Netflix, and it was basically fine. Yeah. Yes.
Panzerg2 says, shout out to Andy Kelly's amazing article on Fallout 4.
It was good.
Game has gotten too much good press from gaming websites with not enough criticism.
That's a good shout. The only thing I slightly resent is that people sometimes say, like, if we say something nice, like, it must mean, I don't know, like, sometimes people just like things, right?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Like, you may not like the same thing. But
yeah, just because we like a game doesn't mean we were paid off to talk about it.
Well, and the article in question is, I forget what it's called, but it's,
Fallout 4 is a good game, bad RPG.
Yeah, and so, I mean... Don't take that article as him like shitting on the game entirely. I think a lot of us like the game. I love the game, but yeah, I agree.
I mean, alternatively, I wasn't a huge fan though. So
Phil Savage in his review, which I think was excellent, and scored it fairly. Like, you know, he drew out like a number of criticisms and complaints of it, and we discussed as a team like throughout the time he was reviewing it, other people would be playing it too, and they would share their experiences, and not everyone thinks the same thing, but Andy's point of view is very eloquently explained and yep. legit.
Max Ursus is the original Sweeney, by the way.
Okay, I'm in then.
Get Telltale okay. on the phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I really liked Andy Kelly's piece about, basically he was just pointing out that, you know, Fallout is a very fun game, but its RPG elements are really lackluster and very 100%. Crummy, basically, which I'd agree with, but also I didn't play much of the game because I just really didn't get hooked by it very much. Let's see. Marmite on Pizza, which is a great name,
yeah.
asks, how many bow ties do you have? I lost count, probably around 40, something like that.
They're all pretty cool.
Actually, we talked about Doctor Who. You guys can't see, but this is my TARDIS bow tie today. So I'm a total
Sorry for
geek.
Being mean about Doctor Who.
No, it's fine.
Think
I,
how good
I don't
the,
wear bow ties because of Doctor Who. I wore bow ties good, before Doctor Who wore bow ties.
Think how good the Matt Smith, Amy Pond era was versus now. Like, it's night and day different. It's so bad.
I think so I bad. Agree last season. I think this season is actually really good. You know, they made a Doctor Who video game, and it was apparently
they
just dreadful.
Few, yeah.
Like,
few.
The most recent one apparently was not good. Star Wars Galaxies died. Yes, it did. I meant Star Wars The Old Republic, not Star Wars Galaxies. Excuse me. That was my mistake, so thank you, Panzer. Let's see. Questions. Why does it seem like not Matteo gets asks, why does it seem like game journalists get so much crap? It seems like people always want to criticize guys like you for just having your own opinions.
Hey.
And it's we won't touch.
I love that guy.
Thank you.
Basically, I think what part of it comes from, and we're not going to, you know, dive into the no. deep delve of what it's like to be games journalist because nobody is crying for us right now. But
I'm rightly so.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That didn't mean that to say that people should be at any point. But I think part of it is that a lot of people will see opinions that we write and are very passionate about and assume that we are saying that is the way it always is and it is fact. And a lot of the time when we write opinion pieces, they're opinions, right? We know that not everyone will agree with them. Review, at its core, review is subjective. It always will be and always should be. You can't write an objective review about a game.
I talked to – I was out last night drinking with Tyler and a couple of other people who write about games in different capacities. And we were talking about reviews. And obviously, like, there's an element with which all of us, and I include myself, you go to, like – to take it out of games for a second, I might go to, like, a movie site to read a review of a film I've seen, or I might go to, like, Pitchfork and read a review of an album I already own. And, like, if the reviewer's opinion, like, significantly diverges from mine, I'll be like, well, this guy's an idiot. This guy, you know, he doesn't get it. And that's kind of natural. And with those things, they're much more – they feel much more – like, movies and music, you're not going to kind of just go, well, the bass playing was bad, so that's the reason that album sucked. Or, like, oh, I saw the mic dip into the shot, so that film is a failure. Whereas with games, there's – I think they're a mixture of – they are more of a mixture of like the aesthetic and the mechanical. Like, I've banged this drum a few times. I know this may be controversial, but I have this analogy that's, I think writing about games is more akin to writing about things like cars, actually, and not in the sense that it's like boys and products and stuff, but like a car is something which has to do, like, it has to fulfill its function, right? It has to get you from A to B in an efficient way, not break down, have a load of features that are kind of like, it has to have sat nav and airbags and whatever, and it could be more expensive or less expensive. But also, there's an emotional response to it, which is the way the car looks, the way it feels, how you feel about yourself when you drive it. I'm not saying games are, you know, games equal cars, but the job of writing, I think, is a mixture then of like aesthetic and mechanical evaluation. So when you're reviewing a game, I think you're both responding to it as the person you are, who's like grown up, how you've grown up, and the tastes and opinions you've developed, but you also have a job of going, actually, these things don't work, and I can break down for you why I think, as a piece of design, they haven't hit the goal they seem to have set out for themselves. You know, does that make sense?
Anyone curious why Tim is editor in chief? That speech right there should explain it to you.
Simply put, I think, unfortunately,
big old bunch of bullshit.
A lot of people just like look at score numbers, and maybe if it doesn't like reinforce their own opinion, they'll react.
It's tricky as well, because like, plenty of people. There's also like a slightly elitist counterpoint of like, well, I wish reviews didn't have any scores. They're most of the problem. But as like someone who consumes scores in all sorts of other aspects, like I think they're a useful shorthand for like, I think this game, which is an open world game, let's say, sits around about here in the pantheon of current open world games on this platform. I don't think that's irrelevant, and I don't think I should go, I'm not going to tell you. You must read all 3,000 words. Like, like if you want to skim it, if you want to skim it and read the last paragraph and look at the score, I like that's up to you, man. Like, I'm not going to tell you what to do. And I think I don't know. It's just like it's another way of delivering some information.
I'm with you.
Scores for life, man.
Come on. Let's move on. Then we've talked about inside baseball enough. Fido asked, "What do you think of the upcoming Roller Coaster Tycoon World?" which I just
is really that the Atari one?
Yeah. And I just really quickly want to express that I have no idea because their original footage of it looked really dreadful.
Yeah.
And then they had to delay the game, and there were not good reports of the beta weekend they did, and I feel
I saw it at GDC early this year. I thought it looked so bad, I didn't even know what to say about it.
Yeah.
But since then, I've heard other people saying, maybe it looks a bit better, but like...
And the delay is interesting, right? The answer is, I have personally no idea, because...
I'm more interested in... is it Planet Coaster?
The one I'm really interested in Planet Coaster, yeah.
I feel like I've got more faith in probably the heritage that's within that studio.
And also, you don't need faith to justify it, because they released a gameplay video where they looked at their crowd mechanics and how each entity and each person was an actual thing. Like, they wouldn't walk through each other or anything like that. And immediately, I was just like, this looks great. Like, this looks like what a coaster game should be.
I love those games as well,
Oh, me too.
Tycoon 2. I think... Planet Coaster is where I'm putting my roller coaster hopes as well.
Your roller coaster dollar has been marked.
But betting on which roller coaster game will come out ahead is a lot of ups and downs in that.
No.
A lot of twists and turns.
Get out of here.
Loop de loop or two.
Stop. This is stop the show.
This is horrible. Shut it down.
Well, unfortunately, I think we're going to have to stop the show. Bad puns aside, we are out of time. So thank you very much for everybody who joined us today on the PC Gamer Show. Once again, this is our first stream from the new office in our new studio.
Very hot studio.
And very hot studio. There are some things we need to work out, like air conditioning and that sort of thing. But if there's anything you're very passionate about, any feedback you have for us about audio quality, camera setup, topics, anything you'd like to talk about.
James's beard.
Working on it.
My stupid keyboard. Tim's obsession with Hearthstone.
Next time I come on, if I get invited back on, I'll talk about only games that aren't Hearthstone.
Okay. I'll hold you to that.
Be better prepared.
More importantly, the listeners will hold you to that.
Yeah.
Okay. But if you have any questions or comments or anything like that, please go to pcgamer.com/podcast, and this will be the first link, and you can click on it and leave any comments you have in the comments of that article, and we read them. You know, we do. Or you can do it on the YouTube page at youtube.com/PCGamer. Anywhere you post them, and we'll try to see them. And please, we value your feedback. So yes. Let us know. But thank you very much. Once again, I've been Tom Marks with James Davenport and Tim Clark. Thanks very much for joining us, guys. And we'll see you next week, Tuesday, 1 p.m. Pacific time.